corn is 3D. Ah, the corn is popping in your face and 3D.
Well, stupid, are you ready?
Okay,
isn't
that silly?
Shoot it now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and keep it together. Keep it together, Mark. And we are doing an episode all about the opportunities in the history of Warner Brothers Animation's history of deciding to put out a cartoon short in the third dimension. Now... this can range from simply putting out a cartoon with a lot of visual tricks and early incarnations of 3D back in the William Castle days when it was a gimmick, or in the era we're in now where any movie or any major release can be seen in 3D, just retrofitting a lot of the CGI animation we're already using towards 3D audiences. And when you know something is 3D, it's hard to pretend you don't know it. And so these are three very interesting cartoons we have today, and three different ways of going with 3D filmmaking.
Yeah, so the ones we're covering are Lumberjack Rabbit, I Thought I Saw a Putty Tat, and Daffy's Rhapsody.
Exactly. And as we said, one of these was a Golden Age one. The other two were done in the era of Warner Brothers, where they decided to start putting Warner Brothers cartoons in front of their kids' releases, essentially. And the one thing that unites these three, other than, you know, the Warner Brothers insignia, is, I don't know if I imagine you feel the same way, Mark, but I thought all three of these were beautiful.
Yeah, these they really stepped up their animation game.
Oh, all three of them. God. And like, I mean, I figure that some of the newer ones look good, but even the one you're covering, even Lumberjack Rabbit, is like, there are amazing animation moments. And I was saying this to you when we came on, when you have a cartoon that is focused on looking amazing and being beautiful, then you can either focus mainly on that and just say, okay, this is going to be a really beautiful cartoon, or you can also put the time in to make sure there's something substantial by it so that it's not empty. And all three of these cartoons had to deal with that problem, and some did better than others, obviously.
Yeah, and also interesting how all three of these cartoons, I mean, you already said this, but, you know, how they reflect different viewpoints of the use of 3D.
Yeah.
Because the first one we got here, Lumberjack Rabbit, which came out on September 25th, 1953, came out right at that big bursting the gates open of this. There's this new thing, it's called 3D, it's gonna have people leave their homes, leave that stupid television behind, and come back to the theaters.
Exactly. It's a big response to television. What television doesn't have to bring you to the theaters will do amazing things that have to force you, basically, to see our movies.
Yeah, so Lumberjack Rabbit came out on September 25th, 1953. Guards were happening on that day, and this is some weird as hell timing, considering this person just passed away. Statesman Gorbachev weds his wife at a wedding ceremony.
Wow, happy Gorbachursary.
Yeah. You know?
And then right after the wedding, a bird just dunked on his head, and then he said, no, that's bad.
No. Yeah, Gorbachev, a man we thought was dead for years, kicked the bucket like a week ago since we were recording this.
I think. Something like that. Can you imagine just going back to the wedding? Can you imagine if Ronald Reagan sent in a, wish I could be there message? He's like, Mikhail, I hope you're all right with you and yours. I hope that any invasion of...
I don't know.
Tear down this garter. I got nothing.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down your wife. Just go to town. You deserve it, buddy.
Believe me, Nancy is very lucky.
All right. So the show was directed by Chuck Jones, written by Michael Maltese.
Yeah.
So some interesting tidbits here. This is the first and only 3D Looney Tunes cartoon to be made during the golden era of Warner Brothers Animation. It's the one and only one because due in part... Okay, so Jack Warner... Warner Brothers released House of Wax around this time with Vincent Price.
With Vincent Price.
One of the first big 3D films. It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, oh, I wouldn't do 3D shorts or what have you. And essentially what happened is within situations is that because the idea of 3D shorts are very expensive, Warner's closed the animation department for a little bit. They just shut it down.
Yeah.
They made this one cartoon, went, holy shit, that's the budget? Shut it down, shut it down.
Yeah, they literally, basically this cartoon made the Warner Brothers animation division go bankrupt, essentially.
Yeah, because, you know, they want to see how House of Wax would do, because, like, if House of Wax did amazing... Okay, cool. Open the studio up. We're all good. 3D shorts are the way of the future. House of Wax did... Okay, I don't think it bombed. It was one of the first successful ones. But I think it's a situation of 3D shorts are very expensive. Let's not do 3D shorts. We'll just release this one because we already finished it. So,
And then the following year, Warner releases Dial M for Murder, which is a big 3D smash, and the rest is history.
And what's strange is, now I haven't looked into this, but originally, what I always heard about this cartoon is there's only one 3D moment. It's the very opening. There's this one 3D moment, and the rest of it, you can't really tell.
Well.
I tend to disagree. I tend to disagree. There are moments in this cartoon that, while it's not as in-your-face as early 3D is, I would actually say it's a little bit like what 3D is now.
Yeah.
You know, where it's not about the all-in-your-face, it's more about the depth perception.
Exactly. Yeah, it very much uses tricks to make things look like they're more varied and more, like... It adds perspective. It adds, you know, horizon. It's art tricks, essentially. And in animation, you can do more. In animation, you can do those a lot easier than in live action, because then you have to screw with filters and glasses and things. So, yeah.
So, the biggest notice as we go into the short, the biggest thing of 3D is the Warner Brothers shield coming a little bit too close to the camera and coming back.
Even the opening shield is trying to attack you.
Yeah.
Hey, fuck you, WB!
Do you think... I just imagine it's... You know, like in the 20s, it was the trains coming right at you. Can you imagine someone who went to that screening? It's like 30 or 40 years later. They're with their grandkids, like, okay... I know what movies are now. I'm fine. They go in, the usher hands him glasses. What are these? Oh, well. Puts them on. Oh, God! Oh, God! Grandpa! What? The train! Grandpa. It's coming right at me! Watch the cartoon, Grandpa. Also, this is a little thing. The shield is off-center when it comes back.
You're being critical and you're being nitpicky on the most expensive, painstaking Warner Brothers cartoon to this point. Where the technology was so new. it's a little off-center. Yeah, of course it'll be off center. It was 1955 or 53.
True. Though I will say, I did like, this is another instance of, oh, wait a minute, that's actually in 3D, where they cut to the classic Bugs Bunny inn, and the background is different. It's like a trick. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this is supposed to be in 3D. The Bugs Bunny inn's supposed to be, like, in your face.
Kind of, yeah.
Which is very, that's cool. Our story is, we're in the time of Paul Bunyan. And, you know, a narrator is just narrating, listen, you know, this is, you know, Paul Bunyan, the story. A lot of people don't believe that Paul Bunyan was a real person. But, look at this rabbit. He was there. And we just go down to Bugs. And Bugs is singing Jimmy Crack Corn, I Don't Care, which, you know, we're all familiar with. And, did you know this song was racist?
I know now.
I didn't.
When I was young, I used to wait on Master and hand him his plate and pass the bottle when he got dry and brush away the blue tail fly. Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care. Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care. Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care. My master's gone away.
I don't know, right? It's like, oh, Jimmy Crack Corn, now that my master's gone away. Wait a minute! Oh, no!
Everything was so racist back then because white people ruled the world. Oh, wait, they still do. Shit.
Like, how could a Bugs have known about this song? Cut to, like, 50 Bugs cartoons that took place in the South. Like, oh, okay, there's that one, and that one, and that one, and oh, there's that one.
He's being animated by white people who were... are alive before civil rights. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, true. So, we then get this scene, just Bugs walking along Paul Bunyan's garden, and it's ginormous. The beginning of this reminds me of Jack Rabbit and the Beanstalk, but it's not quite there. It is different in how they do things. So, and this is kind of where we get our first real look at perspective. You know, there's these giant carrots and these giant backgrounds. The backgrounds are the star of this cartoon. It just are. Because you're like Buzz is small, but the backgrounds are huge, and you just gotta go, okay, you can kind of tell where the 3D's coming from in some of these shots. But it's good. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really damn good.
So we revealed our main villain of the short, who isn't Paul Bunyan. You thought it was going to be. It's not. It's his dog.
Did Paul ask for too much money?
Listen, I'll only show up for 15 seconds.
A very brief cameo by a fictional character.
And so, Paul Bunyan's dog, who... looks like Charlie Dog, but isn't Charlie Dog, because we see his name tag. It's like, well, what is it, like Rough Bunyan or something? It's some sort of dog pun, I think. And, you know, and Bugs realizes where he is. He's like, oh my god, it's carrots, they're giant carrots. And I love when we cut back to him. He's already set up a mining facility.
No, so because the detail is because he's going through all these large vegetables and he sort of camps out in front of these giant carrots. And I love the slow burn of this. Of Bugs doesn't immediately realize he's around all these giant carrots. Just, you know, he sits down and he's like, that's funny. I keep smelling carrots. And then he eventually realizes what's going on. And that sequence of Bugs mining the carrots is so well animated. I also think it's kind of cool. Because, you know, the shot of the dog peering above the little miniature mining track when he sees what's going on. It's just the perspective and just like how large the dog is and just how small Bugs in the carrot mine is. It just looks really cool.
Yeah, so eventually Bugs meets the dog. And, of course, the dog is, you know, is an intruder. So, of course, Charlie wants to get rid of Bugs. And we do get some... I do like the reveal of the dog's and the dog's license. The Bugs just says where that giant billboard comes from.
And that's when Bugs realizes that he's been sort of like where his track has been sort of lifted up, and he realizes he's above ground. And the music spike and reveal of Bugs being so far above ground is great.
And just the line from Bugs of, I'll be scared later, but right now I'm too mad.
Now I'm mad. Yeah.
That's every day, man. That's every day.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll be honest. There's not a ton of, like, long, drawn-out gags. I mean, look, this is very much about visuals and less about actual gags, but there are some small gags here. Like, the simplicity of the dog trying to swat Bugs but flicking himself in the eye is aided with this really good
animation. Yes, and there's also what I think is now one of my favorite types of gags. It's pupil gags, where Bugs goes into the dog's head, and there's just a shot of this bloodshot eye, and there's just Bugs just standing there, like, huh. Pulls out a shade.
I love that. Huh. And then there are some little gags of Bugs just sort of, you know, peeking around the dog, and, you know, we've seen gags like that before. We'll see them again, but they're pretty cool.
Yeah, Bugs then kicks a worm out of his home.
I love that. I love that. It's a great kind of, if this is true, then this is also true kind of translation. Okay, if Bugs is really small and needs to jump into a rabbit hole, then whose hole is it? It's a wormhole. That's genius.
So he stays in the hole. The dog sticks his nose over the hole and tries to sniff. Of course, yeah. Bugs has a feather.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like, oh, what a silly character, as he deals with the dog's nose. Sneezes so hard that it forces Bugs into Paul's home.
Yeah.
And inside a moose call horn, in which my favorite gag of this short happens.
Oh,
where
yeah.
The dog runs in, gets the moose call horn. Somehow he realized that it was in there. And blows on it to get Bugs out. Of course, it calls a moose who thinks it's a love mating call. The moose runs all the way. Hearts flying everywhere. We just cut to a looking down shot of just, there's the dog, the moose comes in, and it's one of those, oh, that's right, everything's small.
It's a regular size moose.
Tiny moose that comes up. It's a small moose. The moose looks up at the dog and just runs away while making dog noises.
It's such a silly gag. I love it.
Yeah, so eventually the dog does it again. This time Bugs flies into the barrel of a gun.
Sweet Jesus, he's in a gun. Had to.
These are the jokes, folks.
Had to.
So, the dog, whose name is Smidgen, but I don't like that name. It's a very odd name.
I don't
it's
like
just
it
the dog. Just fires the gun. Sends Bugs flying into an apple. The dog then grabs the apple and eats it. And then, you know, Bugs is, you know, still in the apple. So the dog then eats the entire apple, gets a toothpick to pick out his teeth, and walks away. He shot. Okay, I could have sworn, because Bugs is a comment, like, oh, look, it's a torpedo, because the bullet's so big.
Yeah.
This is cartoon logic, because he shot Bugs out the gun. Well, certainly, oh, mine, I was thinking, wait a minute, but didn't he shoot a bullet? Like, wouldn't there be a gag of, like, Smidgen blowing up because he ate a bullet or some shit? Like, no.
No, they didn't think it through that much.
So Bugs comes out of the dog's teeth, thanks to the top of a toothpick.
Yeah.
And he, you know, plays around with the dog's ears. He then goes into the dog and starts scratching him.
I liked that. I liked the dog's expression there.
Yeah. Which, originally wrote down here, An Itch in Time 2 in 3D. But no, yeah. It doesn't go there.
No.
Though I would have loved it if the dog went, man, I better stop doing this. I'm starting to like it. But no, we don't get that. So let's have a like dog joke. And then the dog is finally about to get Bugs. He's gum trapped by he licks Bugs, which is like, I don't know, it's weird. It's like, because Bugs scratched him, now the dog is Bugs' friend, and now Bugs has to get rid of this tall dog who now likes him. Okay, I'm kind of... But, no, it's not good. We just end with the short, with Bugs doing the same thing he did in A Hair Grows in Brooklyn.
Yeah, except it's a giant redwood tree.
It's a giant redwood tree. It's like, look, Rover, look! And the dog just runs to the...
I still like it, though, even if it is a borrowed gag.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, okay. And, oh, and another little 3D trick they do. When the That's All Folks comes up, it's faded in. Because it's supposed to look like it's coming off the screen.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Again, this was very early in what
yeah, it was early.
In what this could be. So
this was good.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's a good Bugs Bunny short. I do see how Bugs going against Paul Bunyan's dog is like a different way of doing things.
Yeah. You could have gone against Paul Bunyan though, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's called Lumberjack Rabbit, but like nobody cuts down a tree because Paul Bunyan was a lumberjack. What's wrong about the... Whatever, it's fine. In regards to the 3D aspect, I can see where certain shots are coming from within the camera. But it's a pretty normal Bugs Bunny cartoon. You can kind of tell they were told to do this. Okay, make a 3D Bugs Bunny cartoon. Chuck, you're our top guy. Go ahead. And Chuck's just going,
all right.
Well, okay, all right. And you know what? It helps that, you know, some of these directors went to art school or taught themselves about perspective. Because that's how they did a lot of this short. A lot of this was, okay, well, if the dog's here and Bugs is there, that's going to lead to a good effect.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So that's good. And it pays off. It pays off.
Yeah.
Well, way more than I thought it would when I first heard about this cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, this is a beautiful cartoon, and I love how this works, and I love how they do perspective, and how they make just a lot of shots look incredible. Ultimately, it's a little empty. Not a lot of great gags, and it doesn't do a lot with the Paul Bunyan concept. I wish it would have done more. And it mostly skirts by on visuals and music. I also question how much of a 3D one this cartoon actually was, you know, because it was early on, and I wish they would have stuck around to see what the 3D would turn into before really jumping the gun on it. As is, it's pretty good. I definitely enjoyed watching it. There's a lot they could do. I just wish they did a little bit more.
Also, I would be down to see this in 3D. Like, if there is a 3D print of this, like, I wouldn't mind seeing it once just to be like, oh, okay, that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. All right. So I'm giving this a 3 out of 5 Anvil rating.
I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5 because just mostly for the animation alone, this is an incredible one to watch, even if it is a little empty. So I can't shortchange it that much, but still, all right. All right, so we move from the Golden Age all the way to the early 2010s with these next two. That both of these are interesting in that they're basically adaptations of old Mel Blanc record tracks, like audio tracks, like stuff that was recorded for, I believe, vinyl records. Because back before, like rock and roll music, they would just have compilations of, like, you know, kids' music and just regular music, you know, and they would do these Looney Tunes sort of collections of things, and Mel Blanc would record the voices for them. And so these were pre-existing tracks for them from the 40s and 50s and things that Warner Brothers excavated and remastered and used for, at the very least, two 3D animated shorts. And the first of these that hit theaters, though, as we'll discuss later, wasn't the initial choice for being the first one, was I Taught a Putty Tat, which was released on November 18th, 2011. On this day, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department reopens its investigation into the death of film star Natalie Wood after receiving fresh information. Wood drowned off the coast of California in 1981. The last known whereabouts of Natalie Wood were basically she was on a boat, on a private yacht, I believe, with her husband, Robert Wagner, and her friend, Christopher Walken. And, you know, things happened and people have said that either Wagner or Walken had, you know, been the cause of death or pushing her or something. I've done contemporarily. I've done my walk-in impression of just being him on the stand going, "This all happened unbeknownst to me. I was doing my thing, and that was in the back. She was doing her thing. I come back around. Sooner or later, wood floats." You know, things like that. So that happened on that day. I don't know if anything's come of it. In theaters that week were... this is actually funny considering what we're starting this episode with. November 18th, 2011 was the day that The Muppets was released in theaters.
Oh, shit!
Yeah. Actually,
okay.
A lot opened on this day. And considering that we're now in the age where, like, studios will maybe have one major release every month, on one day, on one Friday in November, we had The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, we had The Muppets, we had Martin Scorsese's Hugo, which, while not a moneymaker, is still an incredible movie. And then we have the movie that this was packaged with, which was Happy Feet 2.
Happy Feet 2.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Happy Feet 2, by the way?
Once.
Okay. Was it any good?
Out of curiosity. No, because I don't like the plot of it. Okay, so the first one, right, was...
I like the first one.
Everyone can sing. Oh, yeah, it's great. Everyone can sing, except for Mumbles. He can dance really good, though.
Yeah.
And Happy Feet 2. Okay. When we took Happy Feet 1, we just switched it. That's what it is. I believe it's Mumbles that has a kid who can't dance, but I believe he can sing. And everyone came back. Robert Williams came back, which is shocking that he came back for an animated movie sequel that came out in theaters that even he himself didn't do for Aladdin or for Ferngully.
Yeah.
Like the one sequel he just went, yeah, sure. Yeah,
you know, it's Happy Feet. You know that's Happy. What the masses have been clamoring for.
And also, Hank Azaria, I think, played the bad guy in it.
Okay, cool.
Or something.
I know that the posters for this movie build that Brad Pitt and Matt Damon had a special guest appearance Bill and Will the Krill.
They played Krill. They weren't significant to the movie, if I remember, but it was a big deal. Yeah. It's like, hey, isn't it funny how I have these huge movie stars play such insignificant roles? Back when there was a new idea and not like what every movie does. Hell, the Thor movies now have that.
Yeah.
With Matt Damon, ironically.
And ironically, I saw a Brad Pitt movie recently that also had some gratuitous cameos in it. So. Yeah. Like, you know.
Boy.
But, yeah, no. Happy Feet 2. Again, I like the first one. I haven't seen the second one. But I remember it being not as good, apparently. I did the song thing on this day. I did number one song in the US and the UK, and as well as some other charts, because it's pretty relevant. Number one song in the US, We Found Love by Rihanna. As far as Rihanna songs go, it's a pretty damn good one. Number one in the UK. Before I say the title, I'd like to say that I am censoring the title slightly. It is the...
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because it's Neighbors in Paris by Kanye and Jay-Z.
I knew it! I knew that was the song! I was like, gee, what famous song title do I know that Jordan cannot
say? I mean, there's not many, so...
It would probably be that one.
And you know what? In squaring these two off, I don't know. I mean... Yes, Neighbors in Paris is all hook, but I think We Found Love is the better song. But
they're both pretty good.
I don't know. I still do kind of like Neighbors in Paris.
Yeah.
And yes, I want you all to call it that. Because
yes,
it's hard to say anything else.
Neighbors. Yeah, on Neighbors in Paris, I think that was the canceled sequel to the John Belushi starring film.
No, I was going to say, that was the third Neighbors movie with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron that never got made.
Oh, yeah.
What are we doing in Paris? Yeah.
And you know that we've had that song both in the movie and in the trailer.
I think, like, I want to say the first time I... No, it can't be that. But it's definitely a song that comedy movies would include in a trailer. You know, Neighbors in Paris. And again, I... By all means, if you can't say the title of that song, I'm gifting you Neighbors in Paris. I'm pretty sure that at one point, Jay-Z and Kanye West may have been neighbors. While they were recording the song, maybe they got adjoining hotel rooms. They come out and say, howdy, neighbor. Now, to be clear... I am just reaching the edge of what I can't say. And I apologize to anyone who was offended by this somehow.
Can I just say one more thing about Neighbors in Paris?
Yeah.
There's got to be a video out there of someone recutting the trailer to Rugrats in Paris with that song, right? Da-da!
No, because instead of the end, because it ends with the... I want to say Sinead O'Connor, You're Not Alone song, but instead of that, when they have the dance at the end, you just go,
okay, with your moms, come on.
Yeah, just for the motherfuckers in the audience. Or just when John Lithgow and the snail is rushing through town. I just want to make it clear. I really hope this is safe. I think it is.
You're fine.
I'm worried.
You're fine.
I hope so. I really hope so. I also want to mention that, cause when the site I used to search what was on the pop charts during that week also gave me the rock charts that week. And the number two song on the rock charts that week is my favorite song ever made, Walk by the Foo Fighters. So,
that's a good one.
That's probably my favorite song ever.
That's a good one.
It'll never not bring tears to my eyes. Yeah. So, back to the thing we should be fucking talking about. Toa Toa Putty Tat was written and directed by Matthew O'Callaghan. It was produced by Spike Brandt and Tony Cervone. So even if the initial animation, because it basically the whole thing takes place in the same, you know, busy street corner apartment that Tweety and Sylvester have always lived at. But, you know, in 3D and things. But so even if the initial animation has been improved since 2007, because, you know, the stuff they were talking, the opening where we see some of the credits or we see the name of it, like it's, you can tell that CG animation has come a long way in the last 11 years. But once we get inside the apartment and see, you know, how Tweety looks, how Sylvester looks, how Granny look, there's so much detail. You can see the detail on Tweety's feathers. You can just see so much stuff. Again, this is one of those where I would have loved to see it in a theater because, like, you could just see so much in depth in terms of this animation.
This is the most budget Tweety has ever looked.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And it's to a case where... What I love about this is that, yes, it's incredibly detailed, but it's still Tweety, you know? It's not like those videos you see where it's like, you know, what if Peter Griffin looked like in real life? And it's like this weird CG monstrosity. It's not that, like, you can still tell it's Tweety and Sylvester. They just look incredible. I mean, the best way I could put it is... It's like a 4K upscaling.
Pretty much, yeah.
They upscaled the characters to 4K, and they actually look really good.
No, they look excellent. So, but yeah, the whole thing is basically, it's set in and around Tweety and Granny's apartment, and it's Tweety basically singing, you know, this I Taught It to a Putty Tat song, which is very much like, you know, it uses the sort of, you know, the usual, you know, I Taught It to a Putty Tat sort of chorus. And it's from the perspective of both Tweety and Sylvester. Tweety talking about, you know, how Sylvester is, you know, the big bad putty tat's always trying to get him. And Sylvester talks about how, you know, Tweety's the bane of his existence because he comes so close to getting the bird, and always he starts singing that and something ends up going horribly wrong. Mm-hmm.
The song was written by Alan Livingston, Billy May, and Warren Thompson.
Billy May here for the Looney Tunes.
The same I saw, he also helped write the next song, and I saw that name, I'm like, oh my god, yes, that's great.
Oh my god. In between ads for OxyClean and the River City Sliders, you have the Looney Tunes. So because this is a song cartoon, we need to judge this, because obviously the content and the plot is done around the song. And so we need to judge this on timing to music. First of all, the music itself, the track sounds really good. It's been remastered. I know it's a Mel Blanc track. It's been remastered well. It fits in so well with the new orchestrations that have been put behind it. The timing to music. So you just see a lot of cool things the animators do. Like as Tweety mentions the battle putty debt for the first time, you see Sylvester sliding in and trying to get into the door right on the drum beat almost. And in time, with the sound effects are in time with the song. And then what's great about this cartoon, or at least I hope it's great, is that because it's set to the song, we have these gags happen in almost no time at all. So we have this aerial shot as Sylvester opens the window and then springing Tweety out to startle Sylvester, nearly getting him off of there. Then it moves so fast that we get Sylvester nearly falling, getting his fingers caught in the door within seconds, and it works! Because we're moving so quickly because the song is the backbone of this cartoon. And it works putting all of those things around the song.
Yes, and it also helps that the Looney Tunes cartoons, especially Freeling cartoons, who would do these shorts, it helps that they've already always been timed to music. That's what Merry Melodies were, essentially.
Yeah.
So I like how this does still fit within that classic Looney Tunes short style and mentality.
Exactly.
And what's great is that because the song itself is only how long? How is the short the song itself? Maybe
it's like 4 minutes.
But however they do it, it's, you know, they were able to put as many gags as possible, and that's just fantastic.
And that's a very good thing. Now, because the whole thing is that the song has, you know, it has a Tweety reverse and I have a Sylvester verse. And so the first Sylvester verse is, again, it has some really aggressive, almost face-to-camera stuff where Sylvester is literally peering at us, the audience, and just you see the full depth of his face. And it's really cool. And what I like about this cartoon is the ability to still make the song competently performed for us as part of the cartoon, while also having gags and a cartoon going on around it. So I love Sylvester doing the chorus, almost mocking Tweety with the timing of him saying, "That putty tat is me," right as the cabinet comes right down.
What do you say? I caught a tall putty tat creeping upon me. You bet he's more putty tat. That putty tat is me.
It's so well timed. And it just, stuff like that just really works. It is also very cool to hear what I can only assume is new June Foray audio in this clip. Yeah. As Sylvester nearly wakes Granny and you hear her. Now, again, June Foray was still alive when this was recorded. They got her back and they had her do some new stuff alongside all this.
And that's just fantastic. Yeah. Like, through the power of technology. Here's a June Foray Mel Blanc voiced Looney Tunes cartoon in the 2010s. That's great!
Isn't it great?
That's fantastic.
June Foray was so damn good. And yeah, the gags in this come so fast and they still work. Like Sylvester slamming his hand on the stove and drawing back in pain happens in like 3 seconds and it still works. Same with Tweety slamming him in the face with the pan. And it happens all while Tweety is singing the song. This cartoon can do so much in so little time.
And my favorite of these quick visual gags is...
Oh, my favorite too.
Tweety singing. Like, oh, that putty tat. That putty tat is thinking of ways to hurt me. And yeah. We just cut to Sylvester. He's sharpening a kitchen knife with this devilish look on his face. as the lighting gets a little bit darker around him.
Like he's in shadows, yeah.
He's pretty much almost entirely in shadow, and it's such a perfect image that's gonna be my wallpaper for something. It has to be. It's too damn good.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. It was my favorite shot in this as well. It just, and the fact that that's just a silly little cutaway, and there's so much detail in that, like, oh man. The shot of Sylvester clawing the floor before being sucked into the vacuum is awesome. As is the shot of Sylvester's claws grasping at Tweety as the vacuum skids away. The use of actual Mel Blanc audio and yelps here really helps this.
Yes.
The bit where Sylvester, thrown outside again, comes down. No, yeah, he comes down on the flagpole before being flung up into the building is where I really wished we could have gotten a full-length 3D Looney Tunes film. Because, man, could this unit really make it work. All of this, I got the same vibe that I sort of got with, like, other contemporary and, like, full-length animated movies that captured the same spirit, like the Peanuts movie and parts of the Tom and Jerry movie. And they could have done it.
Isn't that just getting a teensy tiny bit annoying? It's like, look at all these examples of what a Warner Brothers Looney Tunes fully animated movie could look like.
No.
Do it!
Never happens.
Never.
Like the aerial shot from earlier, the shot from below of Sylvester bouncing on the clotheslines and coming in towards us dramatically is amazing. Then Sylvester's audio going downward as Tweety cuts the clothesline. So many really clever things in this. And most clever of all, keeping the shot focused on Tweety as he does the chorus as Sylvester gets run over unfocused from below. Keeping that shot going and using a lot of long shots and long takes and keeping the focus. Did Emmanuel Lubisky take note of this before he went in to do Gravity and Birdman? Like, oh yes, long takes. The cartoons can do it. Of course, you know, obviously, because we have to have more Granny in this, Sylvester eventually wakes up Granny, and Granny pummels him with a broom. It is kind of odd that Tweety refers to Granny as my mistress.
And when I sing that little song, my mistress knows he's back. She grabs her broom and wings you down upon Sylvester's back. So listen, you bad putty cat, let's both be friends, you see. My mistress will chase you if you sing this song with me.
Which that's, I understand.
Okay.
I understand that this was innocent and for kids, but calling anybody my mistress is, you know, does Tweety have O's in different area codes or something? I don't know. Excuse me, neighbors in different area codes. I would like to thank the gods for just landing that joke right in the palm of my hands. So good. And what I will say about this cartoon, because it's very good at integrating the song with the cartoon, I do think the element where Sylvester has to sing along with Tweety to stop getting beaten up is where this owing itself to the record track has its limitations. Of course, you know, the ending has to have a duet moment, but the short, of course, has to do that as well. I do like this fun little musical bit where it's Tweety and Sylvester singing it together, complete with Granny on piano. I love that bit.
Oh my god, it's a wholesome moment. It was nice.
That was sweet. Granny on piano. I love that.
Granny on piano. Lovely shot. Sylvester holding Tweety as Tweety does a little dance.
That's like, great. God, I love that. I love it.
That's the thing with these characters. Yeah. They can pull off the mean and cynical, but they can, especially with Tweety and Sylvester, they can get along.
Yeah. It's a really sweet moment.
You know, it's so funny how you mentioned the Tom and Jerry, the movie. I made that distinction now. Because, like, the whole thing was like, what if they're friends now? That doesn't work for Tom and Jerry. Sylvester and Tweety, it could. It could work for Sylvester and Tweety. But yeah. But I do love this because you can't end Sylvester and Tweety cartoon with everyone being okay. You can't do that.
You really can't. So you have Sylvester taking a moment, grabbing Tweety, getting out, like, zooming down the apartment. And this ending where Sylvester gets crushed by the piano right as he is about to eat Tweety is amazing. It's like, okay, figures. And also, you know, the piano that we know is in the house because Lecrae was just playing it immediately just gets pounced upon him. So that's great. And then, of course, we get a cute little That's All, Folks. So this was a bit more substantial than the last one. Yeah. I liked all the gags they worked in here around the song. It was the way that they used them so quickly and so efficiently, I think, was incredible. The animation was insanely good. I loved a lot of the different angles we got, a lot of different camera tricks we got. It felt like there was actually, you know, direction and camera usage instead of just cutting different frames. It felt like there was this whole varied world going on that we were seeing it. The devotion to the sound effects, to the little Melbix, to June Foray being in there, it was fantastic. They were clearly fans. It flowed super well despite its short runtime. I would have loved to see this in theaters. I would have loved to see more stuff like this. And knowing that we also have some other stuff from this era, including some other Wile E. Coyote cartoons, I really liked what this unit was doing in this era.
Yeah, this is a really good... Let's just throw this in front of some dumb kids movie, Looney Tunes short. I do love how... Because again, my initial impression going into this, like, my fear looking at these two shorts was, I know they sing a song. I don't know what else they do in it. Is it just them singing the song? And thankfully, ooh, I was corrected. No, this is an actual Sylvester and Tweety cartoon going on.
Yeah.
There is a song, but it doesn't take away from the things you come to know and love about these characters. The gag work is great. The animation is fantastic. Mel Blanc does a great job for someone who's been dead for 25, 30 years at this point. It's lovely to hear June Foray as little of a role as she has in this. I love a little bit more June Foray, honestly, just because you have her. Like, come on, like, might as well. If anything, this should have been the thing that should have convinced WB to maybe look into doing a little bit more with Sylvester and Tweety in this style, because this is a great style.
Oh my god, I loved it.
So good.
You know what? I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. I don't fucking care. You can do what you want. I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. I didn't find any problems with it.
I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5 animals.
And that's fair. Because at the end of the day, I'm always going to enjoy Tweety and Sylvester cartoons more than you do. I was just absolutely won over by this cartoon and could not think of anything wrong with it to knock off a 0.5.
Do you want me to be a technical bitch again? Because I have only one thing.
What?
There's like one moment where it's near the very end and Tweety's saying, so, oh, I thought I saw a putty. And like the audio of it was getting a little bit shoddy.
Every time that I approach, this is all I hear.
I tore a putty tat a tweeping up on me. I did, I tore a putty tat as great as he could be. And when I see...
It's a 50 plus year old composition they had to remaster from a record, Mark.
The last short is Daffy's Rhapsody. Came out on February 10th, 2000.
In theaters that day were Safe House with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds.
Wait, hold on. I didn't see the full date. It came out February 10th, 2012. Okay, go.
In theaters that day were Safe House with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington. Chronicle, the movie that introduces audiences to a young asshole named Josh Trank and a dopey little shit named Dane DeHaan. And the re-release of Star Wars The Phantom Menace, which I saw in theaters in 3D, thinking they were going to do all of them, and they didn't. The swine.
Wait. Joan, you forgot about one other asshole about Chronicle. Potential Looney Tunes screenwriter Max Landis.
Oh, right. Max Landis wrote that. I forgot about that. Yeah, Max Landis wrote a Pepe Le Pew movie that we're never going to see. It's too on the nose that Max Landis wrote a movie about a character who starts pursuing women that don't want to date him. Also released on that day was Journey to the Mysterious Island, which was the long-awaited sequel to 2008's Journey to the Center of the Earth, which I saw in theaters and I thought was very okay. The sequel replaced Brendan Fraser, who played the lead in the 2008 film, with, as all franchises inevitably do, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Also, I remember that Journey 2 also had Michael Caine in it and Luis Guzman. So I think they all knew what it was, but it was a family adventure film in 3D. You know the drill. And Daffy's Rhapsody was packaged alongside it.
Yes. So the songs of that day, what was number one on the charts in the U.S. Number one was "Set Fire to the Rain"
by Adele. And number one in the UK was "Make Me Proud" by Drake featuring Nicki Minaj. I don't know that one very well, so advantage goes to the US.
No, but I will say, on top five rock songs, number one was the Black Keys, "Lonely Boy," which
I love that song.
Number two, Foo Fighters, yet again with "These Days."
Well, I also friggin' love "These Days." Again, 2011 was the year that "Wasting Light" came out. "Wasting Light," I think, is my favorite Foo Fighters album. I say that, but then I'll listen to "Color and the Shape" or "Nothing Left to Lose" again, and that'll be my favorite. But I think that is my favorite album, and it was also a huge record because it was the last Foo Fighters one to date to really have a lot of Billboard and chart success. So pretty much every single from that album, including "Rope," "White Limo," "Walk," "These Days," they all charted in some capacity. And "These Days" is a really fucking good song. Didn't do too well on the overall charts, did well on the rock charts. I really enjoy it, and it's a great one if you ever hear them play it live. I don't know the next time they're going to tour, considering they don't have a drummer right now, but hopefully, if you get the opportunity to see the Foo Fighters live, hopefully they'll be as good as they were with Taylor. They're one of my favorite bands. So,
I mean, they just get his son.
Well, his son is also young. Like,
that's true.
There's two options for a replacement drummer. Are either Taylor Hawkins' kid, who's like 16, and Nandi Bushnell, who's younger than 16, I think. So I don't think taking a child on the road would really help their long-term psychological habits. I mean, just look at what happened to the kids from Silverchair going on the road at 15 or whatever. But, you know, hopefully they do tour again and hopefully they'll get a good drive.
Yeah, but if you haven't, watch his kid play My Hero. It's the best that's a great fucking clip. Thing ever.
So good.
We're deleting this, but it's fine. All right, so
whatever. It's going to come out in only a couple weeks anyway, so it's fine. True.
So this show was directed by Matthew O'Callaghan, written by Tom Shepard, who sounds familiar. Yeah. Didn't we cover something that he wrote on before?
I just did an O'Callaghan one. I don't know about Shepard, though.
The song itself was written by Warren Foster, Michael Maltese, and yes, Billy May! Billy May here working with two legendary Looney Tunes writers. What the? What, was there an off week? Those are really good Looney Tunes writers. They're just like, okay, well, got some time to kill. Hey, Warren, we'll go write a Daffy Duck song for kids. Sure.
Yes, I wonder if our third writer knows anything about infomercials.
We had fun.
One thing I do want to note, and I'll probably note it when we actually get to that point, but Billy West does the voice of Elmer here, with the exception of one line provided by James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah. Which, okay. Kind of a weird thing. What, did they forget to record a line? Like, we did everything.
Do you want
to
get into it?
Not yet. I do have some notes here.
Okay.
So, originally, all right,
then leave that question hanging for another two fucking minutes while we talk about some other background things.
We'll pin it for now, and we'll get back to it soon.
Okay, all right. So just remember to ask me again, or else we're all going to fucking forget.
So, as you alluded to, originally, short was supposed to be the first one.
Yeah.
You can tell, because, one, It's a, you know, it's a Daffy Elmer cartoon. Those are pretty popular. Number one. Number two, Mel Blanc's name is in ginormous golden lettering at the front, which I love. That's great. And number three, the reason it wasn't put in front of Happy Feet 2 was because, it's according to Entertainment Weekly, the studio wanted a more appropriate short with Happy Feet 2, and having a bird-led short playing in front of the Penguin movie made sense.
Breaking, Warner Brothers forgets that Daffy Duck is also a fucking bird.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
No, we wanted a cute bird, and then Daffy would go, "A fucking excuse me."
He looks more like a penguin than Tweety does. So, like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Sure.
Also, I find this interesting. So Billy West provides Elmer's voice here. So, I believe this makes only Billy West and Joe Alasky as the only Looney Tunes voice actors to work with Mel Blanc.
In a sense.
You know, because Joe did Yosemite Sam and Roger Rabbit, and Billy West is kind of working off of a Mel Blanc recording with this, so it's like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Get to work with the original guy. That's nice.
Unless you want to count Noel Blanc. I guess not.
That could also be my my Yakko impression.
That, no. It sounds like your Tina Belcher impression.
All right. Yeah, so let's get into it. So,
yeah, you want to know what happened?
The first line.
Yeah, literally. The first line has two different Elmers.
Requiem for a Haunt. That's right up my alley.
James Arnold Taylor does Elmer saying the title of the opera, Requiem for a Hunt, and then Billy West does the rest of the line. So I am led to believe, I suppose, that they changed the name of the opera after the VO was recorded and couldn't get Billy back, or perhaps they needed the character to read out the name of the opera, so because some person in a test audience complained, because, again, I get really pissed off when movies and things state things that are obvious, but do so in badly redubbed ADR things, hearkened on by test audiences who can't even tell their right foot from their fucking left foot. I hate that, and this is a victim of that. And so they couldn't even get Billy West to do that. So James Arnold Taylor, in between doing all this.
Because I'm just thinking, like, why did they record this while he was doing Clone Wars?
I mean, that's the other thing I know him from, so yeah.
James, hey, bye-bye. Listen, before you leave. Yes? Yeah, before you leave. Can you just do this one voice as Elmer Fudd? This one line as Elmer Fudd?
No.
Okay. Do you know if I can do Elmer Fudd? Like, I don't know. Can you do Elmer Fudd? Like, I could try.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's done Elmer Fudd before, but passable. That's like a horrible Elmer Fudd line, but it's whatever.
You know. So, yeah, and so they're setting it up, and the whole premise of this is that Elmer goes to an opera not knowing it's an opera and show starring Daffy Duck, and so he's literally reading the program, which the program literally says Pogwam. I love that.
Love that.
Very cheeky.
Love it.
And so, this entire song that Daffy does is like the Pigs in a Polka. It's set to one of the Hungarian dances, I think. Don't quote me on that. I may have just done the wrong one. Fuck. Let me check real quick. Because I don't want to fuck that up. I'm checking. All right, let's see. What was the name of it again? Daffy's Rhapsody. Yes. Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 by Franz Liszt. And it's all set to that. And so the whole thing is that Daffy's doing this song and dance thing while Elmer slowly realizes, hey, wait a minute, that's Daffy Duck. I should be shooting him. And so I like the... yeah. I like the...
There's no other duck like me. Cut to fucking Ah.
The cutaways to Elmer realizing it's Daffy and getting his hunter's hat and gun are great. And so this song is about Daffy basically, it's Daffy's lament. It's Daffy going, you know, why do all these hunters have to end up shooting at me? Why can't they shoot at somebody else? Why somebody like me? And there's not a lot of great substance in it. But I love how when Daffy wonders why they don't hunt some other animal for a change, we see cutouts of Tweety the Roadrunner, Wily, and Taz. Yeah, you try hunting Taz or the Roadrunner in that manner.
Yes. Right, but right before that, this is my favorite
moment.
Oh,
for fuck's sake, Mark.
How dare you talk about my favorite moment? Where Daffy says, there's no other duck like me, and they cut to these beautiful posters of Robin Hood Daffy, the Scarlet Pumpernickel, Dribble on Daffy, and Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century.
Yeah.
It's fan service, but goddammit, I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all.
No. I mean, look, the people making these are big Looney Tunes fans. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making Looney Tunes. that was my Harry Styles answer. Thank you. Very good.
What?
Audio. Yes?
Wait, what? That's a Harry Styles? What?
Well, wasn't there all right. This will be relevant by the time it's out, but isn't there a clip circulating right now where Harry Styles says a really dumb answer, like, you know, the movies are great, that's why they're called the movies or something like that.
Yes.
And it's just Chris Pine just sinking into oblivion. Yeah.
You know, my favorite thing about the movie is, like, it feels like a movie. It feels like a real, like, you know, go to the theater film movie that, you know, you kind of, the reason why you go to watch something on the big screen.
Man, Chris Pine had a Chris Pine had a fucking ball at this thing. He cringed.
All of Chris Pine's co-stars and directors are fighting, and Chris is dissociating his way through the fucking press tour.
It's like, good for you, man. Like, live within the chaos. He's probably, you know, maybe this week is where he goes, man, maybe my Star Trek crew was actually the best thing ever. I mean, I don't think he hated anyone at Star Trek, but this must be the thing that gets him to go, oh, I'm signing up for like 5 more Star Trek movies. That cast is great.
He got to work with Zoe Saldana, Simon Pegg, Carl Urban, John Cho, and Zachary Quinto on a daily basis. That's a pretty good shake of things.
Yeah.
So, very good audio work having the male audio sound like it's coming from under the pot lid when it comes on Daffy's head. That's a really good echo effect.
That I won't have to end up on a kitchen range. But no. Duck hunting's all the rage and they won't let me be.
But yeah, no, it's a lot of just Daffy singing this song and Elmer trying to shoot him. And the gags here aren't quite as strong as the last one because the emphasis here is more on the song than on the gags, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I also like Elmer responding to Daffy's line of, I'm so lit up with bullets, I look like a Christmas tree, by popping out from a present on stage with a gun and saying, ho, ho, ho.
I'm lit up like a Christmas tree.
Oh,
ho, ho, ho.
Oh. So Elmer's also a fan of Neighbors in Paris.
Do they say ho, ho, ho in Neighbors in Paris?
I don't know.
Oh, I get it now. Oh, it took me a moment.
Oh, really?
Folks, don't cancel me. Cancel his ass. Pay no attention to the tall schmuck behind the curtain. Oh, God. Oh, my God. And I thought we'd have nothing to talk about this episode. The struggle between Daffy and Elmer as they're on stage is fantastic. It's sort of grappling with the gun. I like a lot of it is done in close-ups and is choreographed to the music. Like, you know, Daffy mentions dancing and goes into a little dance move. Honestly, this doesn't pick up for me till the song speeds up. and Daffy's bouncing around the set clouds and gags are happening there and things are happening a lot quicker.
Did you notice that the clouds were Acme clouds? They were made by Acme.
That's great.
That's lovely, awesome. Yeah.
The shot of Daffy coming downstage as the cutout musicians and hunters pass and form a symmetrical line is beautiful. This is why I love animation. Again, there's not as many oh my god shots in this one as there was in Toilet Toilet Petit Tat, but there are some really good ones, like that one of the sort of the line of hunters and going down. Again, the camera movements, remembering how camera movements work in 3D shorts. I love that.
Yes, and you like the while the song speeds up. First of all, have this neon lighting effect where at Daffy's speeding off and he goes like, how about some rabbit stew? And it's a picture of bugs. Like,
yeah, I like that. A Bugs cameo there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the yellows and purples as it gets faster. And as Elmer starts really shooting at Daffy. Again, I love the color contrast.
Yeah, it's just Daffy going hootin', rootin', shootin'. It's just all different ways of going shooting, which I think that's an instance of, Looney Tune writers wrote this.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it sort of skids to a halt almost. And Elmer sort of missing enough times and shooting basically the whole scenery down and getting crushed by the house Buster Keaton style. I like that. And we have a That's All Folks, but we have Elmer shooting through it, Daffy escaping, and Elmer just shooting the camera. So now I know why this didn't go out with Happy Feet 2. Elmer shoots the audience, save it for The Rock, he can take him.
It's like, oh, now I'm really, really mad. Shoot.
No, because it's literally Elmer with the gun pointed at the camera, and you just see a fist come into the range, and you just hear, can you smell? And just cut to black. I think I did that right. I know next to nothing about wrestling. Close enough.
Yeah, so this short, what I can say about the short is that there's a lot of energy. Tons of energy here. It's really good stuff. Again, this is my favorite type of Looney Tunes project is the we love these characters and goddammit, we're going to do something about it projects. Yeah. I love those. Because you can tell when a Looney Tunes project is done for the money and when something is done because the people behind it actually care.
Uh-huh.
And this is definitely one of those instances where, like, they care, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Also, you're also given Mel Blanc audio, so you know you can't fuck it up. It's like, this is, like, the one chance we got at this. Probably shouldn't fuck it up. And they don't. I did prefer the Tweety one a bit more because there's a lot more gags and there's a lot more attention grabbing. But, no, this one also had just... fantastic work and pretty good animation.
Yeah, I didn't think this was as good as the other 3D one. I didn't think there was as good of a thread line with the track. I didn't think the song was as memorable as the other one. There were some beautiful moments, especially as the animation started getting more fast-paced and energetic toward the end. Not as good as I Toilet Toilet Petit Tat, but still all right.
Yeah, I'm giving this a 4 out of 5 animals.
I'm only giving it a 3.5, but still pretty decent.
All right, let's see what you guys had to say about these 3D shorts that come right at you.
Yeah. James Irish, friend of the podcast, collaborator of ours, all-around good guy, says, while I haven't seen Daffy's Rhapsody, the record that forms its basis has been in constant rotation on my phone's music library, thanks to being included on one of the Dr. Demento collections. Wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. Awesome.
That's great.
Cool. Yeah. He says it breaks up the vintage rock and R&B nicely. I'm with you on the vintage rock, man. To be honest, of the two track ones, I think that Daffy's Rhapsody was the less memorable song, but I think it was a bit more effort put in than just the Toilet Toilet Petit Tat song. Yeah, I can see people listening to this on their leisure. It's pretty cool.
All right, we have a comment here from Jesse Pindus at JPN for the win, who says that, in their opinion, Lumberjack Rabbit is a fun Bugs Bunny short, though it doesn't really lend itself to 3D. If he's not mistaken, the only real 3D effect was the WB shield popping out in the intro.
Yeah, pretty much. You know,
yeah,
mostly just
pretty
tricks.
Much, yep. In my most perspective. He says, continues that I thought I saw a Putty Tat and David Rhapsody were both fun with the combination of new animation and the classic Mel Blanc songs, especially Daffy's Rhapsody, which had more of an original story and I think plenty of things that pop out at the audience. So a very pro Daffy's Rhapsody crew here, Jordan.
Yeah, because we were kind of like, we preferred, or at least I preferred, I thought I saw a Putty Tat.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, I like that one. I think it did a lot right. I think that it was, you know, very well paced and... Now that I'm thinking about it, you know, the song piece, I think, actually worked really well here. I still prefer I Toys Well Putty Tat because it did a bit more, I think, with, like, 3D and with, like, just as in terms of an animation standpoint. But, yeah, no, you guys are allowed to like it because you guys have your own opinions and you're allowed to have your own opinions. And
yes.
You know.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for your comments this week. All right. So... For next week's show, we're going back into the world of Jay Ward.
Yeah, we're doing another commentary.
Of our copyrighted, perfect commentaries that you all like, because no one's ever said, stop. So.
No. I hope you guys like them.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, I mean, we try and do these every so often to, A, buy Mark some editing time, but also because we like doing them, and also we want to put in some other cartoon criticism, and you know, we want to strengthen our output and do some movie stuff in addition to just the solely Looney Tunes curriculum that we have. And again, we have other ideas of other stuff to do after we finish with this one. We have a couple other commentaries prepared, including a really odd one that's going to go up, I think, early next year. But
yeah,
the one we're doing next is George of the Jungle 2, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of sequels that don't have Brendan Fraser in them.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah,
there
it is. And again, I talked about this on the last commentary we did for George of the... Well, not the last one we did. I talked about this in the George of the Jungle commentary. George of the Jungle is one of my favorite movies. I've seen it a million times. I've only seen the sequel once or twice. And twice being the time I watched it for this. Will it be as good as George of the Jungle? No. Will it be any good? I guess you'll have to find out.
Yeah. So that's for next week's show. But in 2 weeks.
Yes, we should do that as well.
Speaking of...
What?
You fucking what? Nailed it. Okay, watch this. Watch this. Mm-hmm. For our show in 2 weeks...
Nailed it, eh?
Speaking of neighbors in Paris... In 2 weeks, we're going to we're going to cover Shorts that take place in Europe. There's three shorts where they take place in Europe. And yes, it also kind of connects to the next movie we're covering. That also has Looney Tunes in Paris.
I forgot we're almost at a movie episode. That'll be fun.
Yeah, all right. How's that for... All right, so the ones we're covering in 2 weeks are French Rabbits.
Yeah.
A Pizza Tweety Pie.
Yeah.
And Nightmare Hair.
Oh, okay. So two of these I've seen, I think. And the other one, I haven't, I think. So this should be interesting.
Yeah, see, I think I saw the first two. But I believe I've seen Nightmare Hair. All right. That's the end of this week's show. If you'd like to keep up with us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
You can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at that_Looney or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast, that is, wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Anchor, Stitcher, Amazon Music, probably more. We're everywhere these days. And we appreciate you seeking us out, even still.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and as Mick Jagger once said, neighbors in Paris, do it to strangers in Paris, do it to neighbors in Paris, do it to themselves. Good night, everybody.